Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. Many of us saw the news in the paper and on the television, in the newspapers, on the internet, and on TV and the radio about Safe Streets. Safe Streets is a program that we've covered a great deal since its inception, before its inception. We've been part of the community that's been arguing for a program like Safe Streets in Baltimore for a long time, where men and women who have done time, who have been incarcerated, people from the gang community itself, who are walking a different life, to be hired by the community, by the city, to help stem crime and help turn people's lives around. And that became Safe Streets, modeled after the Chicago program, but doing its own twist here in Baltimore. A dear friend of ours who passed away, Leon Farouk, was one of the leaders of that program, one of the founders of that program, a man who spent over 27 years in prison. And became a remarkable human being in terms of his bringing peace to the world. And we lost him. The program kept going replaced by some admirable people. So the problem now, though, seems to be in the news that people who are members of the Black Guerrilla Family, which is an organization with a complex history, a history that goes back to the 1960s when it was founded as a Black revolutionary organization inside Soledad Prison, to take on the Aryan Brotherhood and other groups like that. In some ways, over the last 40 years, has morphed into some people say a very vicious gang, others saying a vicious gang that also has community elements in it. A number of people associated with that organization allegedly have been arrested for heroin distribution and other illegalities while they were employed by Safe Streets. So we're talking about what all that means. And the mayor, meanwhile, has cut the funding to Safe Streets. So we are joined in studio here by Gardnell Carter, who is Outreach Supervisor for Safe Streets in East Baltimore, who's been on the show before. Good to see you again, Gardnell.
How you doing?
I'm well. Good to have you here. Shane Taylor is with us. He's Outreach Supervisor for Safe Streets in Cherry Hill.
How you doing?
Welcome. We are joined by Daniel Webster, who is Associate Director of the Center for the Prevention of Youth Violence and led the study evaluating Safe Streets. Good to see you again, Daniel. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Mark.
Dante Smith is a mediator and a youth counselor. Got his social work degree right here at Morgan State University.
Wilson.
Pardon?
Wilson.
What did I say?
Smith.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I call you Wilson? Dante, as long as I've known you. Dante Wilson, who's executive director and founder of ROCAP. Ernest Smith is in the studio. He's president of the McKeldry Park Community Association. And joining us by phone is Cheryl Goldstein, director of the mayor's office on criminal justice. And that is a crew. So welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The number here is 410-319-8888. Cheryl, let me start with you, if I might, as a representative of the mayor and who oversees a lot of these programs and as director of the Office of Criminal Justice. Talk about what you know that happened and why the funding was cut off for Safe Streets.
Well, I think one thing I want to clarify first is that the funding's just been suspended at this time.
Okay. Better choice of words. That's right. It was suspended. Okay.
Obviously, the federal indictment and the supporting documentation that were released were a total surprise to us and to the mayor. And it's I don't know if you've seen the documentation, but
I have.
It's about a 200-page document. And in light of the fact that we were really getting a lot of information that we were completely unfamiliar with, and the fact that these programs are primarily funded with grant funds that come from the federal government, particularly the Department of Justice, there was just an immediate decision made to suspend funding for the program pending further review and investigation. And the mayor's intention is to convene a very small task force of folks to conduct a review and an investigation and to make recommendations to her about the future of the program and the future of the funding.
A quick question before I ask our guests to kind of comment who are working on those programs. Who's going to do the investigation and what exactly is being investigated?
So first let me say there's going to be what I've been told is that there's going to be five people who are appointed to a panel, a task force to look into these issues. I know that Dr. Webster has been asked to serve as one of the people on that group, and he's accepted. I think that there's still being invitations asked out, and I'm not able to, talk about who else. I don't know that the rest of that's been finalized, although I believe that the health commissioner will also be serving on that task force. And I think that there are a lot of issues that need to be discussed from the city perspective about about safe streets and about the funding. I mean, for example, one issue that we need to look into, which is an issue completely beyond our control, is, you know, what is the Department of Justice viewpoint going to be about funding for this program based on what they've read in these allegations? And I don't know the answer to that. That's something that we need to get more information about. And the other thing I wanted to certainly be clear about is the people who are named in the indictment who are affiliated with this organization, according to the indictment, named COIL, is a program that the city funded up until the middle of 2008 and then terminated their relationship with and terminated funding in the partnership for this program with. And as I understand it, the allegations of criminal conduct all occurred well after the cessation of that relationship.
So the question, no question for our attendee, I guess, in the studio here. So but the funding has been suspended for Safe Streets.
Pending a review.
Pending review. But is it my understanding that the programs that are affected, like East Baltimore and Cherry Hill, none of the people who were involved in those programs were indicted?
That is correct.
So why did we suspend the funding?
First of all, there are a lot of allegations that are out there and information that is out there about potential gang infiltration associated with Safe Streets as a program. I have no information to believe that that is true, and I'm not saying that I believe that it's true. I just think that it's something that we all need to look into. We need to review the 200-page document. We need to get information from our funders about their intentions with respect to continuing to promote the Safe Streets program. And certainly we want to hear from Dr. Webster about his research so far and how he believes the program's working.
He's in the studio with us now.
Right.
So one last question before I turn to our guest here. So the major funding for this program is the Department of Justice?
Yes. The majority of the funding that is coming to support this program going forward are federal grant funds that are coming from the Department of Justice.
Let me turn now to the men who help run these programs. And Daniel Webster is with us, who helps evaluate this program. And he and his office were instrumental in getting this program started in Baltimore City. Phil Leaf and Dan Webster and others in that program. But Garnell, you've been on the show before. Garnell Carter, who is the supervisor on the east side, and Shane Taylor, you have not been on the show before, but you're a supervisor in Cherry Hill, this program. So, Garnell, talk a bit about the suspension of funds and what you, on one hand, but on the other, I'm curious to hear what you think about, in a larger sense, what all this means and what your original thoughts were when you saw that people associated with this program were being indicted as members of the Black Gorilla family.
I mean, it was upsetting to us, but in reality, you know, the program is based to work with them kind of elements in the streets. You know, so we have all kind of people that come into the office and things of that nature, so it's easy to misconstrue any kind of activity in there. But I would go on record and say that there are no members of any affiliation that work for Safe Streets. You have people that may have close ties with some members of gangs, but there are no people that work specifically under Safe Streets that are gang members.
You can say that. You feel confident saying that.
Yes, because one of the things that we have in place is when we do interviews, we have a three-phase interview of any individual that get hired. One is myself and the supervisor. And then once they get past that stage, then what we do, we allow the whole outreach team to interview the individuals. And what's take place in that interview, any bones, skeletons, anything's in the closet is going to come out right there at that interview. So if we don't get a yay for the guy to proceed, then that individual would never make it to the real interview, which is down at the health department. So I think our process of weeding out certain individuals from becoming employed at Safe Streets is real key. You know, the outreach team has a very understanding of everybody that's in our area and posters that we work in, and just about know everybody there. So, you know, we know the shady characters or whatever, you know. The other thing is, in some cases, we do look for an individual that may have a strong connection, but he's not really, let's say, operating with his affiliation. But he has a strong tie. He's respected, and people don't bother him. Because we also need that tie, because if anything flares up, we need somebody to get to these people and bring some kind of negotiation to a table. Well,
before we turn to Shane and Daniel and then bring Dante into this conversation, I'm going to be clear about what we're saying here. When you say someone has a strong affiliation,
yeah,
you mean someone who's either been in one of the gangs, is no longer there, or somebody who has respect from those gangs
exactly.
and may never have been in the gang,
exactly.
but has respect from those gangs.
Yes.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to be clear about what we're saying. Shane, the same thoughts. I mean, let me get you close to the mic there. Okay.
I was upset because I knew the allegations that they was making, it wasn't true, you know. And just like Garnell, we basically had the same.
We got pull that mic tag closer. I'm sorry, man. It should have been done before we got in the air. Go ahead.
We basically have the same setup with our interview process, and also they have representatives from the police department that sit on. You know, that sit on that helps, that also helps safeguard that don't know shady characters come in.
So this was tough for you?
Yeah.
How many men work under you?
Under me is 4.
And how many men work under you, Garnell?
I have 14.
And 14, because yours is the original and the oldest program. This program is supervised overall by the Living Classrooms, is that right?
Yes, it
okay.
is.
So, Daniel Webster, welcome back to the program. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you.
So, talk about this. I mean, again, you were caught. You were. I know. I talked to Phil Leaf as soon as this happened, and he was on his way to a conference out of the country, so he was a little upset to have to leave in the midst of this. But my sense was that all of you were also kind of taken way off guard by this. So, talk about what your research has shown and what this being taken off guard means.
Sure.
And get that again, that mic lifted up closer to your mouth. I'm terribly sorry.
Okay. So first thing, I just want to say just sort of the background of sort of where this came from. The program is based on a model that was developed in Chicago and very rigorously examined and evaluated. And that study showed that in the large majority of communities that implemented this program model, they had significant reductions in shootings, in gun violence.
How significant?
It varied from community to community, but my recollection is that somewhere between 16% and 35% reductions, which is nothing to sneeze at. Very impressive, in my opinion, when you talk about such a significant public health and public safety problem for cities all across this country.
Right.
So I'll confess that before I saw any data and they told me what the program model was, I was skeptical. I was skeptical that you could have this kind of impact. But I'm a scientist. I go where the data tell me to go. And I was very, very impressed once I saw a very rigorous evaluation in Chicago. We, of course, are trying to answer a question in Baltimore: can this model work in Baltimore? And we've been studying this since the program's inception. And to date, we see, I think, something that is similar to what was found in Chicago, which is in most instances, you do see a reduction in gun violence in response to this program. It's not uniform, though. And interestingly, the site in Southwest Baltimore that is now under greatest scrutiny, that was the one area where the program was not associated with reductions in gun violence. It was recognized sort of as the program was unfolding that this was a group that was having difficulty really implementing the program as it was supposed to be implemented. And the health department, after trying to remedy the situation in a variety of ways, ultimately decided to discontinue that contract. So the pattern that I see in the data over the two cities, and I also actually understood that there's recent data from Kansas City implementing this program also showing very significant reductions in gun violence, that when done well, it can reduce one of our most important public safety problems that we have.
These are some kind of important things that are coming out of here, and that's why I will come back to Cheryl Goldstein in just a second before you. I know you only have like 10 or so minutes with us, Cheryl. I want to make sure we come back to you. But Dante, let me bring you into this conversation. I'll get you a little closer to the mic as well. I'm sorry. We've known each other a while. A little disclaimer here. We're friends. You sit on my board. I sit on your board. So we've known each other for a while.
Yes, sir.
But you have done, as I know, some groundbreaking work, working with gangs and young people in the streets in Southwest, in actually the Coyle area.
Absolutely.
And also when you and I talked, you had this idea about the Black Guerrilla Family and other organizations that you thought you had to kind of almost not work within, but to work with to make things change. So talk about that philosophical approach and what you see is what your initial reaction to all this was when you heard this.
My initial reaction, I was shocked with all that information. Even looking at the I try to analyze information. So even when I looked at the news and I looked at the internet, I also looked at the newspaper clippings, the articles, and we understand that the media can play with words. You know, I'm clear where you can see where in one of the articles where it's supposed to have been a front, I guess to hide the criminal activities, but that's not what I saw when I saw work being done inside of the communities. And so in Southwest Baltimore, there was a lot of crime in Southwest Baltimore. There was a lot of shootings. There was a lot of killings. You had the different organizations such as Bloods, Crips, BGF. And what I realized through the respect that we developed in the community with working with children, youth, and their families, a lot of those criminal elements came to me and said, you know, Mr. Dante, we respect what you're doing because the same children and youth I'm working with are their relatives. And so as I speak with them, they began to share different type of information. And as they shared information, what I began to realize is the hierarchy of how things take place. And what I saw was that we can really decrease crime in this particular area. And what I mean by that, because I'm trying to be very careful what I say. But what I have found out that in Maryland with these different organizations that you may have one organization that may be the mother organization for everyone else. And so even though you may have criminal activity with Bloods and Crips in your area, based on – you got
to
go?
I just want to finish that sentence because I just heard that Cheryl has to leave in a couple minutes. I want to ask her a question before she leaves, but finish that thought you have now.
Okay. But based on that hierarchy, we was able to stop killings from taking place. When there was a rumor of this young, when a parent comes to me and say that my son been shot and he's involved with this gang and the boy faces on MySpace as food and the entire city of Bloods is ready to kill this person, I'm able to speak to someone who could speak to the OGs of those organizations and stop a murder from occurring.
Well, then I have two questions here. Cheryl, I know you have to go. I'm sorry. I thought it was 5:30. So let me ask you a very quick question if I could. And you can have a last word in here. And I don't want to put you in an awkward position because you're not an elected official. You don't make the policy. You're there working to get things done in the city, and you do a good job. And I'm not just blowing smoke. You do a good job. But, some people might feel like this was, a political overreaction to shut down programs that have no proven gang members in them, weren't in the indictment, and are doing work that has really cut down violence in McKeldry Park. We have the president of the community association here. We'll hear from in a minute. And that there may have been another way to do this rather than halting the work that has created so much progress. Even Commissioner Bielefeld has talked about how much progress has been made on the east side because of this work.
So I feel like I need to sort of reiterate again that
please.
The programs aren't being shut down. There's been a suspension. It's not going to be there's going to be a short period of time in which there's a review undertaken and there's a recommendation made about what next steps should be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really do want to emphasize that this isn't a shutdown. This is something happened. There's a lot of information out there. Really, we need to quickly look at all of that, make an assessment, find out what's going on, what our funders are saying, what our options are, and make some recommendations about what the next steps are with respect to these programs. So I think that's the first thing that I'd say. And
okay.
The second thing is, you know, I think you've heard that what you hear from everyone who's on, who's out there doing the work and who you've been talking to so far on the radio, that, you know, there are inherent challenges, I think, in operating these programs. They're so important because of the type of work that they do and the results that Daniel has talked about that they produce. But they are challenging, and they need to be implemented and managed appropriately, and we need to be also looking at infrastructures for implementation and management, and all of those types of things need to be looked at before taking next steps. And so I think everybody who you have on the show right now was shocked by this and upset by that. And what you're seeing, I think, here is a reaction of, we were all taken off guard and shocked by this. And what we need to do as responsible people in government is take a look at what we've got in place and what's going on and make sure that we don't put all of ourselves in a position to be funding a site that faces something like that in the future.
So I appreciate you taking time on. I've got to run, and we look forward to having you back on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cheryl Goldstein, who is the director of the Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice. Number here is 410-319-8888. We want to get the community response. You've read the news. You hear the men on this program speaking about what their experiences are and what this program has done. 410-319-8888. We'll come to these calls coming in. Corey's the first caller up. I want to hear what he has to say as well. I think he's also with Safe Streets. 410-319-8888. Join us here with your thoughts on Safe Streets, the news of the indictments of people as part of the Black Gorilla family. And Dante, let me finish. You were in a real stream there. Let you finish your thoughts before we introduce Ernest Smith to the audience.
I have just seen the work of certain individuals associated or affiliated with whom they are associated and affiliated with. I think part of the problem that we have here, when you use the word gang, and even when you speak to different individuals in that lifestyle, they don't consider themselves a gang. They consider themselves an organization. But, you know, we have this title card gang. But when you look at the gang, what's happening with the media is that it promotes the fear and all the criminality components of that. A lot of people don't understand how it originated from the Black Panther Party movement. A lot of people don't understand how it was supposed to serve and protect the communities and things of that nature. And when I do get to speak to young people who are or other individuals that are in gang life and they study their paperwork and different things of that nature, it's a totally different way of living for these people. And so I have met with some gentlemen who really want to give back to the community. They feel as though they did a wrong in the past, and they want to give back. They want to help families. And because of media, because of videos, because of the hip-hop culture and things of that nature, all of our young people are tied into the negative components of that fast living. They glorify these negative components that we all put in the consideration of gangs. But what I have been able to do is use those same people from those elements who are positive to change families around, to change, encourage young people to go to school, who has gone to young people's houses and found out that they're not going to school because they don't have school uniforms, and so we purchased some school uniforms for you. Because there's a dispute because you from this set and that set, this person is able to go negotiate on their behalf to that OG and say, well, let them out. You know, there's been a situation where when young people get involved with these activities, they have to listen to certain things that are told to them. And so we, in Southwest Baltimore, we had a situation where a young girl, her father punished her, told her to stay in the house. But because of her fear of what she was affiliated with, she left the home. And she left the home because she felt as though some harm would come to her if she don't participate in her meeting. And so the father was all upset. The father was ready to disown his daughter because if you're not going to listen to me, you could go here out there in the streets. But it was those guys from those organizations who spoke to dad like, no, this is the time that you really need to be there. And so let us do what we need to do. Bear with us a little bit. We're going to get your daughter back, and that way you can hold on to your daughter. That's a testimony. And so I understand the negative components, and then what I love what the media does, when you get the negative component, we're going to just feed it to the whole community. However, let's look at the positive things that has happened. Some funerals haven't taken place because we didn't stop the violence for that young person being killed. Even in the urban communities, we don't put up money. We don't expect to go to funerals and things. And so those become burdens when you get the phone call that your son or your daughter has suddenly been killed, and all of a sudden all the burdens, the stress upon the family, now we got to figure out how to come up with the money for the funerals. We stop that in many instances, in situations, not only in Southwest, but in East Baltimore as well.
We're going to take a short break, and then I'm going to come back with our callers at 410-319-8888. I want to know, I mean, I think that what's important here for people to hear from the people in this room is what this program does. I mean, there's a real danger this could end, that the jobs you do on the streets as men who have done time in prison coming back out to do work in our communities could end if the Department of Justice runs scared, because I can see the political snowball where Republican congressmen will go, this is a program full of gangsters and felons, and it's doing the wrong thing it should be doing. Democrats running for cover and the program ending. I could really see that happening. So let's talk about what you think about what should be done here, because I think the people need to hear from your voices about what this program is doing and what it should do. We're going to take a very short break and talk about that, and I promise you, Ernest, we'll get your voice in this conversation. We're going back from the break here. 410-319-8888. We want you to join this conversation. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, where patients' lives are enhanced by a renowned transplant program known for innovation and excellence in kidney, liver, and pancreas transplants. For more information, 1-800-492-5538. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We are continuing our conversation about with men who are involved in these programs that we've been reading about, where a number of people were indicted who came from a program that is no longer under the aegis of the city or Safe Streets, who were involved in allegedly involved in the Black Girl Family and dealing drugs and committing violence. And it was a program run by COIL in Southwest Baltimore, which is not a program that's, as I said, under Department of Health or Living Classrooms or the groups that are involved in this in Safe Streets. But Safe Streets was cut off. Safe Streets is made up of men who are some former gang members. Almost everybody in this program has served time, which is why they're on the streets trying to cut back on crime and doing a very effective job, according to a researcher who's one of our guests, Dr. Daniel Webster, is Associate Director of the Center for the Prevention of Youth Violence and is a lead on the study evaluating the Safe Streets program. Garnell Carter is outreach supervisor of the largest and the first program of Safe Streets in East Baltimore. Shane Taylor's with us, who is the outreach supervisor for Safe Streets in Cherry Hill on the south side of town. Dante Wilson's with us, who's executive director and founder of ROCAP, has been doing this work for many years and is in southwest Baltimore in the neighborhood the COIL was in and has been working with the Black Girl Family and many gangs in that community. And Ernest Smith is with us, president of the McElderry Park Community Association, which is a community association that is in the heart of the program where Safe Streets are in East Baltimore. 410-319-8888. Shane, pick up what you were saying here during the break about the complexities of gang work.
Okay. What I was saying was, like, the model that that we go under is the ceasefire program is out of Chicago. And they have a job title attached to them called Violence Interrupters. And these violent interrupters, they suggest that some of them be gang members or, you know, have gang ties, close gang ties. Because in Chicago, these brothers had to go into gang turf and deal with the gang elements that's doing the, you know, that's doing the stuff in the neighborhoods that they trying to, you know, save. And it's the same here, but we don't, I know that I haven't seen nobody, or I know that we don't have interrupters here. We have outreach workers, and the outreach worker at the same time you playing the role as an interrupter. Mm-hmm. You doing two jobs when the model requires that two people do. It's a separate job, but we doing two jobs, and it's hard.
So in Chicago, the interrupters are much more closely tied to the gang world.
Yes. Yes.
And because I went to Chicago to actually look at the model, the interrupter was that actual gang person. Now, the worker in Chicago's model was more of a case manager, a caseworker. And so once that person came into the program, you can help them with GED or something like that. They was like a case manager, but the person who dealt with the people on the streets to de-escalate crimes and go intervene here and intervene there, they were actually those people who was a part of that lifestyle. And then I think Chicago University gave them some type of incentives where they sent all those people, they could go to school for free until they get their bachelor's degree and things of that nature. And so it's an actual good program in Chicago. But here in Baltimore, you're right, the street worker, the outreach worker is really doing a dual role that is not congruent with Chicago's model.
Daniel, you going to say something about Chicago?
Excuse me. Yeah, I'm going to try to channel Gary Slutkin, who is the creator of this program.
He's been a guest on the show.
He's a public health epidemiologist, long career, successful in reducing infectious diseases. And what Gary would say is, this is a behavior change program, okay? There's a lot of health behaviors that cause health problems, smoking, excessive drinking, all kinds of things. And what we do is we try to figure out, okay, who are the high-risk groups that are engaging in these high-risk behaviors, and how do we change those behaviors? Well, this is in essence what he did with this program. So if you look at urban violence, okay, who's involved in urban gun violence? Well, guess what? People involved in gangs and drugs and those kinds of things. We want to change that behavior. Who's going to be able to effectively change that behavior? Well, you're going to have to get people who can have close associations with and gain trust of the individuals connected to those organizations so that you can change the behavior. The idea from a public health perspective is, as opposed to a law enforcement perspective, is the goal is not to how many people can we arrest or whatever. The goal is, how can we change this behavior? People are shooting people. So this is what that's what the outreach workers do. If they're going to be effective, if we're going to expect them to have significant reductions in gun violence, they're going to have to associate with the people at risk for committing that gun violence. And we have to either say that's something that we're willing to do because this is important to our communities to keep people safe, or this makes us too squeamish, and we're gonna continue with the model where how many people can we lock up? In my opinion, I don't think those are mutually exclusive approaches. You obviously have to have a law enforcement out there. Actually, effective law enforcement makes the public health approach far more effective because they can convince people that, you know what, the gun violence is going to end you up in jail, okay? Right. So I think if you're going to make a big dent on this obviously important public health problem to Baltimore and other cities, you're going to have people that get close to the individuals involved that can be trusted. They're not people to put them in jail, but they're people to try to change the behavior of people shooting each other. That's basically what it comes down to.
So very quickly, Ernest Smith, I'm glad you joined us on the President of McKelvey Park Community Association. If you could very quickly kind of tell us the effect that Safe Streets has had in your neighborhood in the heart of East Baltimore.
Well, what I'd like to do for you, Mark, is I'd just like to first start with your original question, which was, what is the impact or what was the feeling upon hearing about this? And it was like everyone else here, I was just totally shocked because that site, as I had learned about Safe Streets, I thought was one that was shut down and not affiliated with
the Southwest
them and
program,
all
COIL.
The Southwest, right. The COIL program. And so it was like, you know, what's going on here? What's happening? And I looked at what the impact would be to the community because Safe Streets, in at least the East Baltimore site where their program originated,
which is where you live,
and which is where I live at, has been doing a great deal of work there with a number of the youth and young adults in the area. Some of the things that they have actually done have been involved. Getting helping individuals to get back into getting their GEDs, helping them to get into training programs, so like tests or with truck driving school, helping individuals get driver's license so that they can change so that they can begin that behavioral change, because that's the key here. We've got to be able to change these mindsets. Whereas with the police and as Dr. Webster pointed out, it's important that we have that law enforcement component, because without a sense of deterrence, people will continue down the path because they feel like, well, nothing will happen. Mm-hmm. But once we have the deterrence in place, the question is, well, what do I do instead? And so what I see Safe Streets having done is provide an outlet to a lot of individuals so that if it is their desire to not get caught up, to become a part of that deterrent action, those deterrent actions, that they at least have an alternative. And so Safe Streets, as I see it, has been providing those alternatives to a number of individuals. They've also provided help in terms of individuals who have come out of jail, because when you think about what it is we're talking about 18 people who were ex-offenders who have come out of prison. And as we know, with the ex-offender population, there is not a lot of opportunities. There seems to always be a stigma. And so what they've also done there is they've helped us to reduce the recidivism rate, mm-hmm, by hiring them, so, and making them productive individuals in our communities. So what have they done? They've done a lot of things that have helped to change a lot of, at least a number of lives for individuals.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on what you read in the papers, what the Safe Streets program can mean for Baltimore, what it might mean if that program gets shut down because people politically are afraid to allow it to remain alive. 410-319-8888. Corey, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Corey, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing, Mark?
Well, welcome.
I'm well. I know everybody on the panel, so no introductions are needed. But my thing is this. Who is going to apologize when all this is over with? You know, it's saying like the last incident we had when unfounded accusations just thrown at us, everybody just backed the ball from us like you on your own.
You mean you're talking
then
about
when it found out that we wasn't a part of it, no one came to say anything. Now you got another unfounded accusation being thrown at us, and everybody doing the same thing. I feel really mad right now. You know, the paper has labeled me as taking orders from gang members. That is very, very disrespectful. I take orders from two people. One name is Joanne Winfield, and the other name is Ruth Nelson. Just that. I want to get on my knees for one person, and that's God. You understand? What we do, we love to do. We trying to save the lives of these youth, young people, because our life was thrown away. No one came to me when I was 15, 16, running around with guns to tell me anything positive. So this is our chance to give back. But it's like we're not appreciated.
Corey, I'm glad you're part of the show. What part of town are you working in?
I work for Safe Streets East. I am the outreach supervisor.
And which neighborhood is that?
Huh?
Which neighborhood is that?
State Street East. I'm under.
Oh, I didn't hear what you said. Okay, gotcha. I'm sorry, man. I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
Gonnell Carter is my boss.
Gotcha.
And my friend.
So
I know he feels the same way I feel.
So, Corey, I appreciate being a part of the show, and I'm glad you called in. I think that both the intellectuals and the passion that you showed in what you're describing, Gonnell, I mean, this is not a light. This is very serious what could have happened,
yes,
here.
You know, and one of the things I want to also express is that, you know, these organizations, or the men and the women that are out there doing mentorship and everything, this city has just experienced a 30-year low of homicides, you know, and it was good what Dante said about funerals. A lot of people ain't going to funerals no more. A lot of kids ain't being killed no more. You know, something that amazing that we are finding out in our area now is, you know, these crews, organizations, whatever you want to call them, they're not flagging no more. You know what I mean?
Which means
I mean, that's a good thing. You know what I mean?
What does flagging mean? I'm just
flagging means that they're representing their colors or their neighborhood.
Right.
A lot of them, they're pulling up their pants. They're being a little bit more respectful. You know, so as Dr. West was saying, the behavior changed. You know, at some point in time, either through mediation or through our ties and friendships that we have built with these young men and women in these neighborhoods, is that they are starting to understand that, you know, some of the approaches that they had to things wasn't the right one, so they start to take in different approaches, you know. But the biggest thing for me is worrying about 156 participants that I have enrolled in my program. You know, what are they going to do from this point? Because as it was described, the outreach workers do basically three jobs. Not only are mentors, they case managers. They become surrogate fathers, uncles, or whatever, and they have built these relationships and mentoring these people. So now you're saying that these relationships are about to be cut off.
And your funding has been suspended at the moment?
At the moment.
So have you stopped working?
There's a lot of uncertainty right now.
Have you stopped working?
Oh, yes. We have actually stopped working. You know, so, you know, today, you know, we done had three participants, you know, ask us, what is going to happen? You know, and, you know, to basically continue to have these young men and women have hope now, which they didn't have in the beginning, you know, to have sights set on something that they didn't have in the beginning, you know, all that it possibly will change, you know.
Let me know our listeners have questions. A number of people calling have questions for all of you here at 410-319-8888. We're talking about the future of Safe Streets, given the indictment of a number of people in this community who really had nothing to do with Safe Streets. 410-319-8888. LaVon, you're on the air.
Thank you, Mark, for taking my call. And I just want to commend these young men for the work that they're doing. One question that I had, and I do also have a comment. The question, though, is whether or not there is some kind of evaluation, maybe an annual evaluation, so you can show in some kind of report the progress of the organization. That's kind of like speaks louder than maybe words sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The other comment that I had, though, is I think it's unfair that this program was suspended without an investigation. It's really disrespectful because it just shows, like so many other times, if it's generally for the benefit of black people, you know, and it's going to benefit them, generally you don't have to answer to them, so you just kind of do what you want. I mean, without having any facts or finding out what's going on, a program that, you know, may have been successful was just halted without any question. The other thing I wanted to say is, you know, if we want some change, a lot of times we're going to have to do something different than what we were normally doing. We can't keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. And I think this is kind of one of those programs that a change was being done that's going to bring about the result that we want.
LaVon,
that's the comment that I had.
No, I appreciate you being part of it. I want to very quickly ask Daniel Webster to give a quick response to the question about how this is evaluated and what it's shown.
Sure.
Very quickly, we don't have a little bit of time, so I want to make sure we get everybody in here.
Okay, thanks, Mark. We issued an interim evaluation a while back. The program had not been in place for that long, but at least at that stage, we were able to document a very substantial reduction in homicides in McElderry Park, the community where the program began. The other sites we didn't have as much data on. We've analyzed data through the third quarter of 2009 and found, if I recall right, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe it's a 28% reduction in gun violence in McElderry Park, and for Cherry Hill it was something around a 70% reduction in gun violence in Cherry Hill. So there were certainly positive things to see, and we are continually sharing our data with the health department, with the sites. And I guess one other thing I want to mention here, because I think this is important, we were able, with the funding that we had, to also measure the attitudes of youth about violence, about the acceptability of responding to a variety of provocations, conflicts, disrespect, those kinds of things, about whether it's appropriate to respond with guns, with shooting somebody, threatening somebody with a gun. And we found a very strong effect in McElderry Park, a very substantial reduction in youth on the street thinking that it's an acceptable way to respond to conflicts, which
and this is,
which goes right along with the program model that what we're trying to do is change social norms and change behavior.
And this goes right to the 18 men who are working on the streets, working with kids every day, 24/7. You want a thought here about the anecdotal things from you're about to say, Ernest?
And yeah, as we talk about measuring and evaluating, one of the things that I was able to do was actually go in and sit down with Dr. Webster because I wanted to know, what is the impact this program is having on my community? I mean, I hear a lot, but what? Explain this to me. Help me understand this because at the end of the day, this is still about my community. And so I took the initiative, met with him, and actually was literally surprised. I was actually surprised when he started reviewing with me these numbers, reviewing with me the impact that this program was having and how it and what would and so I wanted to find out what would be some of the next steps for the program. And so from a research perspective, it's doing some there the numbers and the data seem to be going well and did, but the most important part is as I look at what they were doing again, the results are good.
Let me get to the phones here and get our listeners. I mean, the phones are jam full. I want people to have a chance to kind of have their say here. 410-319-8888. Randy at Morgan State, you're on the air.
Yeah, my name is Dr. Randy Rowell. I'm at Morgan State School of Community Health and Policy, and I just want to weigh in, and I throw the title out there only because
that's okay.
I've done a lot of research in violence, and I can't begin to say how important it is that programs like this stay in existence. So to those of you who are working with the program, my question is, at this point, what can be done for persons like myself and others to advocate for your continuance of the services that you're providing? Because these aren't just numbers you're throwing out in terms of effectiveness. These are lives that we're talking about.
Right.
And so now we're moving on to the next phase. As we've informed us, now this thing is happening. So what kind of advocacy support do you need right now? What can we do to try to sway the decision makers keep this program alive?
And Randy, I'm going to let Gardner and some of the folks answer that really quickly here, but if you would hold on to and let our producers get your phone number and email, I want to contact you after this. Is that cool?
That's cool.
Great. Gardner?
First, I would say all the level of support to our mayor would be great, and any way that we can find people to fund us as well would be great as well. You know, because these programs need to go on.
Anybody else want to make a comment about that?
I just want to really underscore the most important thing that I think Randy said there was that these numbers are lives. And that's something that I always, you know, sometimes you show people the numbers and it's just statistics. No, they're people's lives. They represent individuals that, you know, lives have saved. And that has ripple effects through families, through communities. It's very meaningful.
Let me get another call in here, 410-319-8888. Kevin in Catonsville, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? I'm gonna be real brief.
Sure, go ahead.
Hey, man, this is an outstanding show. I was a former homicide detective in D.C., and just to be brief, we had a situation on Benning Road where the 2100 block of Benning and the 5000 block of Benning Road had a situation that went on for 10 years where over a 10-year period, over 200 people were killed back and forth over. And we nobody kind of knew what the problem was. And, you know, everyone's scratching their head. It got political. It's the police fault. It's this person's fault. It's that person's fault. And come to find out, it was a beef over a high school basketball game that had happened 10 years ago. And that's why all these and 10 years ago, 200 people were dead. And half of the people towards the end didn't even know why they were beefing with one another. But the bottom line is, we did something out of the box. Look, we went to the crews. We call them crews, gang, whatever you want to call them. And got these people together and just sat them down at the table, man. And I'm telling you, you can look at the statistics overnight. And there were some other things, some programming and some other things that went into effect to help along, man. This whole all this madness stopped, and I mean, it stopped overnight. And it hasn't really picked up. I mean, every once in a while, you know, things happen. But I think, man, you got to stop calling this thing a pro. It's not what these brothers doing. It's not a program. It's common sense, man. I mean, you know, you just got to get out of the box with, you know, the old way of thinking, man. Because if it wasn't for these young brothers that we went to and that actually could go into the community and talk to these people, there was, you know, we wouldn't have been able to put an end to this. And, it, you know, God knows, it's 2010. How many more hundreds of bodies would there have been as a result of, you know, a basketball game?
I think you make a very powerful point here. And I think that what I've asked our producers to do at the moment across the glass is to, before we end this discussion, to get addresses for the mayor, email and postal addresses of the community.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah, we don't have a lot of time, but go ahead.
Okay. As long as those young brothers stay, don't let anybody into your circle that's going to bring embarrassment to you, man. I mean, keep the nonsense out of it, which I know you're doing, man, and just keep going forward. That's it.
Thank you so much. What we want to do is I think that the community has to stand up and talk about this, because I understand people have to run for political cover and they have to investigate where the money's going. But the reality is that some of us have been screaming over the airwaves for 17 years that we have to put ex-felons in the street to end the violence. And Dante has been on the show talking about that for as long as we've been working together. And finally a program, not because we did, but finally a program started, and it's proving effective. And I think that we have to make a great deal of noise about why these programs are so effective. I know some of the men in your programs and the work that you all have done, and that it let me do this. I think we have to take a break here. Is that right? Is it break time? 1 minute. So we're going to take a break, and a few callers that are here, the three of you, if you want to hold on, Thomas, Sean, Ann, we'll hear your quick thoughts when we come back from this break, because we have to go into a different discussion. We have to go back into our Paleolithic history for 25 or 30 minutes after we talk about what's going on right now in the streets. But I want to get your thoughts on very quickly and come back and give you the address for Stephanie Rawlings Blake and the mayor's office, so you can let your ideas be heard on this issue. Stay with us. We're going to come right back before we begin our next discussion. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News & World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. For the next few minutes, we're finishing our conversation and continuing and finishing our conversation about the future of Safe Streets program in Baltimore. And because of the arrest of so many people, the mayor's office is doing an investigation. They said they will suspend the program, but they're going to make it very brief and go as quickly as they can to make a decision. We're going to give you the mayor's address so you can let your voice be heard on this and how you feel about it. In our studios are Garnell Carter, outreach supervisor on the east side, Shane Taylor, outreach supervisor in Cherry Hill for Safe Streets, Daniel Webster, who is the man who evaluates this program, leads the study on it, is associate director of the Center for Prevention of Violence at the Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dante Wilson, founder of ROCAP, has been working with gangs and kids in the street for a long time, is here in the studio. Ernest Smith, president of McKeldry Park, a community association that's been deeply positively affected by the program on the east side, and a woman who we thought was just visiting. We just found out that it's not all men in this program, that there are women working the streets,
yes.
And Janelle Thomas is one of those women. And Janelle, if I'd known that, I told you I wouldn't let you stay across the glass. You'd have been inside the studio.
That's all right. Because
this is not just men.
Yes.
So your role in this program is what?
I'm the violence prevention coordinator, so I work very closely with the community and community mobilization. And one of the things that wasn't addressed that I wanted to address, when you first came on, you asked, how did everybody feel? And, of course, everyone felt shocked, from the mayor's office to the people working the streets to the people behind the scenes. But more importantly, you asked, what does this mean? And it means that suspending funding means that we can't go out and work. We can't save those lives that we're saving. It becomes not a solution to ludicrous allegations, but it turns into a detriment to communities, to families, to children. It becomes a detriment to the future of Baltimore City. So it's way bigger than just suspending funding for a short period of time. And I understand that the mayor has to do something.
Yes.
But we also have to keep saving lives, because Cherry Hill had 14 shootings prior to Safe Streets coming into existence. We're nowhere near that number. We've saved far more lives than lives that were taken prior to us coming into Cherry Hill. And I think that's the important thing. It's not, are we hiring ex-offenders? The important thing is we're saving lives and we're giving hope. And right now you're taking that life jacket away from a sea of people that are looking forward to another day.
I wish you were here from the beginning. You're very hard, very passionate and clear thinking. It was good to have your voice here. And Shane, you were saying as we were going to break, Mark, this is not a program. It's a what?
It's a mission.
It's a mission, and it's also a campaign. And what we're campaigning for is to stop shooting, start living.
Another quick caller before we have to take the break and meet our other guests. Sean in Baltimore, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good, Sean. Welcome.
How everybody doing?
Yeah, you're doing well. Good. We don't have much time.
Okay, look, I just wanted to say this. It's very hard for us guys that has been in, you know, gangs and things like that to step up and do what we do, because we're passionate and a lot of us are really about our work. We may have a few bad apples in a bunch, and then that makes it look bad for everybody. But I assure you, we have saved lives, and we still want to save lives. And it's like, a lot of that stuff is fabricated. It's fabricated because they don't want us out there doing it anyway. But a lot of it is fabricated. And I know for a fact we have saved a lot of lives out there. And I just think that maybe if it was a way that we can sit down and talk to the mayor or whoever we need to talk to, so we can really get this thing on, you know, out front and let them know we serious. Yeah, we may have made, some people have made bad decisions to make this whole thing look bad, and I understand that. But the cut funding, I don't think it's right. I think we need to try to do something to get back, you know, get this thing back on the ball, because we have saved a lot of lives. I've talked to parents myself personally, and they tell me thank you, you know, hugs. And it's nothing like that when a parent hugs you, thank you for saving my child's life.
And Sean, you're calling not as a member of Safe Streets, but as somebody who's been in the gang life and is trying to turn things around in the community, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Be clear about that, right?
Absolutely. And I just would love to, if it was a way that maybe we can try to meet up with whoever we need to meet up with. But this is the problem. When you go and meet up with these individuals, then they'll turn around and try to lock you up. And that's the thing. That's why a lot of people is afraid to step up and say, well, look, I used to be this, I used to be that, but I no longer live this life, so I'm trying to help out because I don't want to blame my children. I don't want to see this. I don't want to see that. So you have a lot of guys that's scared to step up because they're afraid that something may happen. And you get people that get in trouble. You get people that get in trouble for something, and then they'll go to the people and be like, well, I can tell you this, I can tell you that. Well, you know, and most of it be lies. And they'll go ahead and believe it, and then...
Now, Sean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're running out of time, but I'll tell you what, we will come back to this subject. And we have a fun drive here at the WEA next week. But if Monday, if we have to come back to it to talk for a bit, we will do that, because we have to keep this thing, momentum alive, support our mayor in her effort to keep this program alive and not let it die. And I want to encourage all of you to, and you can go to our website, steinershow.org, where the information will be. You can just write mayor@baltimorecity.gov to let her know how you feel, mayor@baltimorecity.gov, or write to her directly at City Hall, Room 250, 100 North Holiday Street, 21202. And that'll be on our website, and we will talk to her office again in the coming week. Follow this, because this program is created by a lot of men and women of goodwill in the city, from the Bloomberg School of Public Health, from men and women who have served time, men and women who have worked in our communities, leadership in our communities, people who have been in gangs and been in prison. And as I like to say, and I have often said over and over again, in our world, in our cities, there's nothing more powerful than the thug who has turned to peace. And we have to keep that alive. So I want to thank all of you for being here today. Daniel Webster from Bloomberg School for Health, my dear friend Dante Wilson,
yes, sir,
for the work you do out there, and thank you for getting folks to help us get this going on the air. Cheryl Goldstein from the mayor's office, who joined us, of course, Cornell Carter, and Shane Taylor, who helped run the programs on the East Side, and Cherry Hill, and have Janelle Thomas in the room. And next time, you're going to be in the show from the beginning of the show and not at the tail end. Thank you for coming into the studio. And Ernest Smith, thank you so much for your clear thoughts about what this program has done for your community. Appreciate you all being here. We are going to take a brief break. When we come back from that break, we're going to be joined by Dr. Brianna Pobner to talk about the new exhibits at Smithsonian and what we are learning about the very earliest origins of who we are as Homo sapiens and hominids. Stay with us.